went forward.
Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier!
Put that coffee down. Coffee's for closers only.
John Stockton sends the Utah Jazz to the NBA final!
And I'm just ferocious. I want your heart. I want to eat your children. Praise be to Allah.
Welcome to a brand new edition of Drive Time Sports. Right here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. As always, happy to be along with you on the afternoon drive, and it is Halloween, so happy Halloween. I go through this every year. I just don't get into this holiday. And I use the term holiday very loosely. I just can't get into Halloween. I try to avoid public places on Halloween just because I don't like it. You know what I used to really like about Halloween? I used to love the fact that it was the beginning of the NBA basketball season. That's why I used to love Halloween. We would get three, maybe four games of NBA basketball, be on primetime. That was Halloween. It was the beginning of the new basketball season. That's not the case anymore because to limit the amount of back-to-backs in three games in four nights, the NBA has spread the schedule out throughout the entire month of October. Now we've had NBA basketball for the last 2 weeks. And in fact, we have NBA ball returning tonight right here to KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM. The Utah Jazz are going to be back in action. We haven't talked a lot of NBA because right now we are knee-deep into the college football season, knee-deep into the NFL season, and of course Major League Baseball just wrapped up. But let's take a look at the schedule tonight for the NBA. I believe we have seven games on tap. 6 o'clock hour, 5 o'clock hour actually, 5:30 is when we're going to get things off and rolling. Detroit will travel on the road to take on the Brooklyn Nets. Start time for this game is at 5:30. ESPN nationally scheduled game, Indiana at New York, 6 p.m. start time there, along with Denver at Chicago. The Jazz will also be in action tonight to take on the Minnesota Timberwolves, 6 p.m. start time. 8:30 tonight, we have three games, New Orleans at Golden State, Dallas at L.A., but for some reason, the nationally televised game is San Antonio at Phoenix. Go figure. Have a chance to watch the Pelicans and the Warriors, but instead, you'll be forced to watch the Spurs and the Suns. So that's a look at the schedule tonight in the National Basketball Association. We take a look at where the Jazz are sitting right now. It was a slow start for Utah, but the Jazz have played a lot better basketball. They've won three straight games. They're sitting at 4-2. So early, I know, in the season. But the Jazz right now tied for the fourth best record in the NBA. Golden State, Denver, and Portland have the best three records. There were eight, seven games into the season for some squads. And so again, tonight, the Jazz will take on the Minnesota Timberwolves. Start time for that game is set for 6 p.m. Really a quiet day for sports, unless you're a Boston Red Sox fan. Yeah, look, I try to stay as neutral as possible on the show. Every now and then, my fanhood comes out from time to time. I mean, you got to be a sports fan if you work in sports media. You know, it doesn't matter if you're talking about some of the greatest sports talk radio hosts in the country. They have their favorites. If you listen to the show enough, you know I'm a big Dodger fan. Yeah, I was a little let down as far as the World Series goes. Here's the worst thing, and this is where you and I can actually relate when it comes to sports. Okay, because if you listen to Drive Time Sports, you're a fan of sports. You have your favorite team. And this is where we can relate to one another. The worst thing a professional sports team can give you as a fan is hope. Right? That's the worst thing in the world. I've talked a lot about the Denver Broncos over the last little while as we booked. You know, yesterday we talked a lot about the Broncos and trading Demaryius Thomas. When Case Keenum was signed, you know, Bronco fans had hope. That gave you hope, right? Because Case Keenum took the Minnesota Vikings. They had a great chance to get to the Super Bowl. They really did. Right? Case Keenum had a tremendous run with the Vikings last year. It gave you hope. The Utah Jazz, you have had hope if you're a Jazz fan. You've had hope under Quinn Snyder. You know, I had hope last year. The Jazz were playing so well the second half of the season. You had hope that they could beat Golden State. In your heart of heart, you knew they weren't, but you had hope. Okay? That's what I had in the World Series as a Dodger fan. I had hope. Game 4, I had hope, but it was 4-0. I had hope. Going into the World Series, I didn't think they legitimately, I knew the stars would have to align for them to get that World Series championship. They gave me hope. And that's the cruelest damn thing any sports team can give a fan. Hope. That's when it really bites you in the butt as a fan. when your team gives you hope. Well, today, if you're a Boston Red Sox fan, you're excited because you had the parade. The World Series championship is back in Boston, where it belongs, hands down. This team went through a gauntlet, knocking off the New York Yankees 3-1 in a best-of-five set. That Yankee team won 100 games this season. Then you move on to the ALCS. And I wasn't drinking the Red Sox Kool-Aid up to that point. I didn't think the bullpen would hold out in a series against Houston. And I know that Houston wasn't 100% healthy. I get that they had injuries. But what do? They took out the defending World Series champions in five games. They lost one game in that series to the Astros. Then you get to the World Series. So you've already dismantled a team in your own division that won 100 games. The Yankees, who were the most high-profile team of the offseason by going out and getting Stanton to team with Judge. I mean, the Yankees made moves. And they well on the Yankees. You go to the ALCS again, you beat the defending World Series champs who also won 100 games, have the best rotation in baseball front to back when healthy, and they roughed up Justin Verlander as well. And in elimination games, Verlander has been almost unhittable. Then you get to the World Series, and you take on a Dodger team that looked as if they sleepwalked. They were sleepwalking throughout the entire season. They were in third place in their division with 2 weeks to go in the season. 3 weeks to go in the season. The Dodgers end up winning the division. They win the playoff game against the Rockies, the tiebreaker game, whatever it is you want to call it. They best the baby Braves. They rally back. They top the Milwaukee Brewers. I mean, the Dodgers were sleepwalking through, and they were oozing with talent. And the Red Sox battled back at key times in this series. Again, you had the 18-inning marathon in which the Red Sox lose. It's 2-1. If you're a Dodger fan, you're thinking, all right, here we go. Puig hits a monster home run in Game 4. It's 4-0 Dodgers. And Xander Bogaerts and Mookie Betts aren't hitting. Yet the Red Sox find a way to score 9 runs in 3 innings. They answered the call every step of the way, and they went through a gauntlet. Well-deserved World Series championship. And again, my concerns with the Red Sox going into the postseason, nobody who watches baseball could argue my legitimate concerns about that team in the postseason. Is the rotation, is David Price going to be able to hold up? Because we know what his story is in the postseason, right? Is that bullpen going to be able to hold up? Because we know how unreliable Kimbrel can be at times. And I don't know how deep that bullpen is. You got to go through the Yankees. You got to go through the Astros. Odds are you got to have to get through the Dodgers. There were some serious doubts about this Red Sox team going into the postseason, and they answered the call every possible direction. World Series champs, hands down. We will talk baseball next segment here on the show. Bill Lasky, former big league pitcher, spent his time with the San Francisco Giants. You know, Bill joins us all the time. If you're unfamiliar with Bill Lasky's story and his route, the bigs, and his confrontation with Tommy Lasorda when Bill was a pitcher for the San Francisco Giants, look it up. You know, Bill bleeds orange and black, so you know he was all smiles when the Red Sox took out the Dodgers. We'll talk to him about that series. I want to get his thoughts, and we'll take a look at the hot stove talk, which is going to really run rampant. Look, if you're a Major League Baseball fan, you're happy that the season's over. If you're not a Red Sox or a Dodger fan, you're happy. Okay, because this offseason has so many question marks. Where's Manny Machado going to go? Where's Bryce Harper going to go? Did we watch Clayton Kershaw pitch his final game in a Dodger uniform? Patrick Corbin, who was lights out for the Diamondbacks all season long, he's a free agent. Nathan Eovaldi, who was amazing for the Red Sox in the World Series. I mean, to me, he is the unsung hero. I hope 15 years from now, we look back and realize that the reason we don't have a Game 7 tonight, and I truly believe this, the reason we do not have a Game 7 tonight is because, A, analytics and the Dodgers front office stinks, but, B, because Nathan Eovaldi was incredible in an 18-inning marathon and saved the Boston Red Sox pitching rotation, saved their bullpen, saved some work from starters for the next two games in which the Red Sox used to close out. He's a free agent. We'll talk more Major League Baseball coming up in just a bit. The day after the NFL trade deadline as well, we have plenty to talk there. Matt Patricia got a little worked up today with the local media in Detroit. I'm going to play you a clip from that press conference. Boy, this is ironic. It is Halloween, right? It's Halloween. There is not a coach or an athlete that you could easily replicate a Halloween costume to the extent of Matt Patricia. And this guy actually targeted the professionalism of a reporter today. We'll talk about that a little bit later on. It is a little bit of a quiet time for the local sports front, but we will give you an update. The all-academic state teams have been released, and yes, Carbon and Emory well represented in every avenue. We got to remember this. These kids are student athletes. Student comes before athlete. And we have a large group of kids that are performing on the field of play and in the classroom. We're going to go over that list coming up in just a bit. Tomorrow, we're going to start talking JUCO basketball because USU Eastern is about to open up the 2018-2019 season. But it is kind of the calm before the storm as far as the winter sports season goes. So all that and more coming up. It is a Wednesday edition of Drive Time Sports. Happy Halloween. Local sports news coming up. Plus, we'll talk with Bill Lasky and recap the World Series and talk some hot stove in Major League Baseball. It's coming up next on Drive Time Sports. We are live from the Auto Farm Studios.
Hey, this is Nick Tropiano with the Anaheim Angels, and you're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini. Here comes a comeback.
We're back on Drive Time Sports, live from the Auto Forum Studios on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7.50 AM. Look, if you're a Boston Red Sox fan today, you are riding a high. The celebration parade is complete. The Red Sox definitely going through what was one of the more unbelievable gauntlets that we have seen in quite some time. And unless you've been living under a rock, you know they are World Series champions. Joining us right now to talk about that and what lies ahead in the offseason, we have Bill Lasky. He joins us each week to talk Major League Baseball. Bill, it's been so much fun throughout this entire year breaking down the big leagues every single week. Now we've reached the end of the season. Before we get into some of the hot stove talk, I mentioned the gauntlet that the Boston Red Sox had to go through. They had to get past the Yankees, 100-win team, had to get past the Astros, 100-win team, had to get past the Dodgers, two-time NL champions, and they did it in suffering only three losses throughout the postseason. Fairly remarkable when you think about it.
Well, they're World Series champions, no doubt about it. And when you look at their offensive numbers and how many wins they've had, and you start looking at all the history of the Red Sox, and they definitely put it all together. I thought the moves were made very strategically. Bringing Sale in to end that last game, I thought was awesome. And to watch the Dodgers lose, I couldn't be more happy.
Well, you know, when I go back and I look at this series, I'll tell you, Bill, what really strikes me, and I think we may even be talking about Game 7 tonight if the Dodgers don't blow Game 4. And you know what? And I'm not even using this as an indictment against the Dodgers. I'm talking about the heart and I guess the camaraderie and the strength that Boston shows in a game being down 4-0 when Rich Hill is just dealing. To me, that's the culmination of a season of which the Red Sox put together. You're down 4-0 in the seventh frame and come back and get a 9-6 win over the Dodgers. This series looks completely different if they don't rally in those final three innings.
Oh, I totally agree with you. And to have Rich Hill go to Dave Roberts saying, hey, I'm running out of gas, I just shook my head on that because as an old-school baseball pitcher as I was, don't take the ball out of my hand until I can't throw another pitch. And to have him worry about, hey, I'm losing strength or I'm losing power, that's not your decision. The opposing team's going to tell you if you're losing strength or power when they start hitting you, and he was dealing that whole game. The Red Sox couldn't even come close to manufacturing even runners on base to try to score a run. He really out-dueled them, and then all of a sudden he just more or less said, well, give it to the bullpen, and sure enough Dave Roberts did, and Kenley Jensen, his number one guy, got beat up, and that's what ended up happening. The key players, the pitchers, Kershaw, Jensen, a couple other ones, they didn't pitch well in the month of October, and that's been the trouble point with the Dodgers. They don't know why, and you start looking at some of the pitches that Kershaw made, the ball got up, and the Red Sox didn't miss. Of course, the last game, they beat them up pretty good, and that's a hard note again for Kershaw to go home and think about in the offseason when we saw him do the same thing last year. So there's some things that the Dodgers have to fill out. They have to, of course, all the fans were all over Dave Roberts for all the moves he made and all the analytics, and I'm sure you and I have talked about this so much this year. When you look down the bench, you had a couple coaches with three ring notes, and then you had a guy with a computer and iPad on him telling him everything that they wanted him to do, and which he did, and they ended up losing again. So I don't believe analytics really won the World Series. I just think the World Series was won by a better team, the Red Sox.
I agree 100% with everything you just said. And in fact, talking about the gauntlet that they went through, the fact that they beat two 100-win teams in the postseason, 3-1, 4-1, and they beat the Dodgers 4-1, I don't think there's any question about it. But, Bill, I want to bring up a particular pitcher that I also believe won this series for Boston. And I know we're looking at 4-1. It looks like domination, but there were just key instances in this series that allowed Boston to get a series win in five games. Otherwise, again, I don't think it's far-fetched to believe we still have a baseball game tonight. You talked about Rich Hill wanting to be taken out of Game 4. Nathan Eovaldi was unbelievable out of the bullpen for the Red Sox in that 18-inning game where he threw upwards of 100 pitches out of the bullpen. There's the difference between these two teams. Rich Hill wants out. Nathan Eovaldi may have given up a game-winning shot to Max Muncy, but at the same time, if he doesn't throw 100 pitches, who knows what the Red Sox staff looks like going into Game 4?
Oh, I totally agree. And here's a guy that was a pitcher that was very good with the Marlins as a starting pitcher. And I remember him pitching some great games for them, and then they put him in the bullpen. And I also look at Kelly too, who was really a dominant pitcher with the Cardinals. So they really did. Dombrowski definitely picked up a couple good arms and transfer him into the bullpen, and these guys were just key pieces to get through those middle innings. And as you said, the game that he pitched in 18 innings, I just couldn't believe he kept going out there. But his stuff was so dynamic. His off-speed was filthy. Velocities in the high 90s. And it was that was a tough game. And, you know, going back on what you said, there were some key points in all these games that the Red Sox made. Some great moves, some good hitting, some great, opposite field hitting. And those are the things that I saw the Red Sox hitters do. They didn't give in at all. And when you see Pierce, who's a guy that played with so many different teams, come in, those are the good stories that come through a World Series. A guy that's battled through his whole career and comes up with key home runs, key hits, and played very well for the Red Sox. And here's a guy that nobody even thought about down the road. But Dave Dombrowski sure finds him. And each one of those pieces that he put in, that puzzle was filled. And they can, you know, as they did today, driving down Red Sox way, and they had that World Series trophy high and proud, and each one of those guys had smiles ear to ear.
You called it. You said the Red Sox would win this series in five. And, Bill, if you'd have told me this stat at the beginning of the World Series, I'd have said there's no way in hell they're winning this series in five games. They might not even win this series at all, because we talked about how potent this offense was. Xander Bogaerts and Mookie Betts combined for, I believe, seven hits in this series. It was seven or eight hits. That's astonishing, considering how good these two were, 1-2 in that lineup. They never really found a rhythm. I know Betts went yard in the closeout game five. Wasn't a lot of pressure at that particular time. The Red Sox were in control. But if you would have told me that stat, I'd have thought there's no way this team wins in five games, because those two were key all year long. But it is a true testament to the offense front to back, not just with Bogaerts and Betts.
I agree totally. And that's when you start saying, who is the guy? Who is the next guy? Who's going to pick us up? And as you just said, the two key components in that offense didn't do anything. And the guys that, you know, Bogaerts are one, could be the possible MVP in the American League. And it's just some of the things that happened in that World Series where you call it a team. It was an individual. Just from, you know, when you look at David Price, tying him up, coming out of the bullpen, starting the last game. I mean, guys like that just gutted it out, and you hear it so many times. These guys went out there daily, and they were sore, no doubt about it. They were stiff, sore. They wanted to get out there and win. And as American League team, to have the most wins in the whole Major League Baseball season, to win this whole thing and win it in five games in the World Series, just shows how together that team was. And you know, you and I talked about Martinez, J.D. Martinez, going into the National League team and playing left field, playing right field. They switched on certain players. I mean, here's a guy that didn't really put a glove on all year, and he's in a position where he can make a mistake and cost them. But in the long run, it was a good move, and I thought they played very well through the whole playoffs. And congratulations to the Red Sox.
Hands down. Again, we're being joined right now by Bill Lasky, former Major League pitcher, now an analyst for the San Francisco Giants. We'll talk more about his work in just a moment. Bill, now we start talking hot stove, but I think this offseason is going to be very interesting. First things first, we can talk about the Dodgers because they have two big question marks here. First off, has Clayton Kershaw pitched his final game in a Dodger uniform? And if that is the case, we're talking about one of the most decorated pitchers in a storied franchise's history. He's done everything you can think of except win a World Series. And on the flip side of that, we have Manny Machado, who didn't necessarily perform all that well. I don't know if there was a lot of team camaraderie between Machado. Did not play well in the postseason once again. Those are the two big question marks for the Dodgers this offseason.
Yeah, and those are two big ones because I think Machado showed a little dirty player in him, and some of the things he didn't produce when he should have, just like the ball he thought was a home run, hits the wall and he gets a base hit out of it. These things are livid with me. As an old school baseball player, you know, running into the first baseman saying, oh, I didn't hit him. And it's so apparent that he kicked him. I mean, those are different things that I saw about him. And here's a guy that could be getting, you know, a $200 to $300 million deal, and he's showing the opposite side that he should be doing. And I just don't think the Dodgers want to re-sign him. I think they're going to let him go. Now, Kershaw on the other side wants a 2 to 3 year extension. You know, do you question what he's done in the past for you as a Dodger? Do you let him go? And then you start looking at injuries that he had, lower back injuries. He's had that for many years. Do you put that many millions of dollars into him, or do you say, go ahead, walk away? There's a lot of questions there. And then you look at the Houston Astros, who has 4 or 5 players that they're wondering, do we re-sign? Do we try to up them in an extension? So there are some key teams that were in the playoffs that are going to have to decide on what they're going to do with some franchise players.
Outside of the Dodgers, all eyes will definitely be on Bryce Harper. And look, L.A. may very well be a possible destination for him. I think if I had to put together a short list, I would say he either stays put in Washington, goes to L.A., maybe Chicago, maybe Philadelphia. I think it's a very short list for Bryce Harper. I don't see him going to the AL. Curious as to your thoughts on Harper.
Yeah, I think he'll stay in the National League also. I believe that. But, you know, all I'm reading now is about the Phillies. They want to spend some money, and at one point they were saying they may even go after Machado and Harper because they really, really think the nucleus of this team is a youthful movement, no doubt, but they want to get some veteran leadership that can give that power in the middle of the order. And they said Bryce Harper is one big name that they're ready to throw the bundle of money in to go get. And then yesterday I was watching MLB Network, and they're saying, hey, they may even get Machado, too. And I'm like, wow. So there is some money that's going to be thrown out by the Phillies. They're in to win it. You start looking at some of the other teams. Are the Mets going to unload some of these starting pitchers? They have a new general manager who is a baseball agent. So, you know, there's going to be some questions. Of course, I look at my Giants here, and the Giants are still looking for a baseball ops guy as well as a GM. Talking to a lot of different names, a lot of names popping up. And what are they going to do here? They just exercised Madison Bumgarner for a 1 year left on his extension for $12 million. And, of course, Pablo gets the minimum because Boston's still paying him $18 million. So there are a lot of holes here and also a lot of talk about trades. And I always look back, well, it's all speculation because you don't have a lead dog to make those moves yet. So the Giants are a rare team that's really looking for leadership right now and where they're going to go through the free agency. But this free agency, there's a lot of top players, as well as the minor league free agents. That's where a lot of teams steal a player here and there. So it'll be a fun hot stove. It'll be a fun hot stove for you and I to talk about some of the moves and some of the thoughts that some of these teams are going and move forward till that December winter meetings.
Yeah, I definitely can't wait for it. You know, you bring up Madison Bumgarner. So I got to ask you this, Bill. 1 year left on that deal right now that they've exercised it. If the offseason does not go well for the San Francisco Giants, is it out of the realm of possible to think that they would look to move on from Bumgarner and get some assets for him sooner rather than later?
Yeah, and I think that's my, you know, that's one speculation they're saying. They've been talking about that the whole month of September as velocity's down a little bit. And he came in spring training last year like a horse. He was so strong, throwing the ball real well. And then, of course, the last game he's in the line drive comes and breaks his finger, his thumb, and then he was struggled. He struggled for a couple months to get his timing back, his rhythm back, and he threw some real good games. That's one big question. They said if they traded him, they could get some marquee pieces, some young talent. Yankees always been wanting him for sure. But then, you know, I look at it this way. I just think they'll go through spring training with him and see how he does the first half. And then at All-Star break, if he's having a good half of the season and the Giants are mid-season form, halfway in the pack, I think that's where they can get the most value out of him. But again, you're rolling the dice on him having a good first half. But he's been the horse on this rotation for many years. Everybody knows what he's done in the playoffs and World Series. His numbers are phenomenal, and that's what every team wants to see in that October, month of October. How good are you? How can you handle the pressure? And there's no doubt he's in the top three pitchers that can do that in the World Series.
No question. Bill, before I let you go, one more question regarding possible free agent pitchers. I'm going to give you three names. Throw dollar signs out. I just want your opinion on which pitcher, if you were the general manager of a team, which pitcher would you target? Let's assume Clayton Kershaw opts out, because I think he's going to. So let me throw Clayton Kershaw, Patrick Corbin, and I'll even throw Dallas Keuchel, who didn't have a great season, but again, we're talking about a World Series champ. Those should be the top three starting pitchers on the market this offseason. Which one would you highly pursue if you're a GM of a team?
Yeah, I think the money aspect's going to change everything on Kershaw, because he's looking for big dollars. Of course, I've watched him pitch every game for the Dodgers, being a Giants analyst. I mean, he's got some superior stuff when he's on. The guy that jumps off on that list is Corbin. I've watched him throw the Diamondbacks. A lot of teams are looking at him as a top left-hander. Good velocity, good curveball, good changeup. Pitched very well for Arizona for the past few years, and he's that unlikely number one ace. Then you look at the Astros. The Astros have a couple guys with Verlander being the ace there, I think the Astros aren't going to let none of these guys go. I think they have rallied. They've done very well. They came up short this year against the Red Sox. But if I'm looking at anybody, I think I might go after Corbin. I think Corbin's got a lot of pluses and not too many injuries. And when you look at Kershaw, the lower back is a problem when I start looking at free agency. A lower back has a tendency to, you can't really strengthen a lower back. It's always going to come back to you. So I think Corbin's my number one pick out of those three.
Bill Lasky, former big league pitcher, now joins us each week to talk some Major League Baseball. Bill, before I let you go, let the listeners know where they can find you.
Yeah, at Lasky19 on Twitter. I'm popping in and out of there and just starting to see what's going to happen here in the offseason. And I think the biggest thing now is just watching what the Giants put together in the front office and see their new GM and what his thoughts or her thoughts will be, because a female GM could happen.
Yeah,
let's
definitely
just see what happens. But another great season talking baseball with you, and hopefully your listeners love it. And I always enjoy talking baseball with you, and hope we can do it again.
Absolutely, Bill. I look forward to it. Again, thank you for the time, and I know we'll do it again soon.
Excellent. Thank you again, and happy Halloween to everybody.
Happy Halloween to you as well, Bill. That's Bill Lasky, former Major League Baseball pitcher, joining us to recap the 2018 season. Like I said, we'll be talking hot stove relatively soon. We've got a break for just a moment. When we come back, I'm going to talk college football. The first edition of the college football playoff rankings came out yesterday. Now, I tend to not really, I'm not going to say care, but get too worked up about the initial rankings because there's so much football left to be played. But the SEC bias just continues to ring true in the world of college football. We'll talk about that when we return. It's a Wednesday edition of Drive Time Sports on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
In 5, 4, 3, 2.
I'm Joe Wade Formicola, and you're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini.
Real name, no gimmicks.
On 7:50 AM, KOAL.
We're back on Drive Time Sports, live from the Auto Farm Studios, KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM. Let's talk college football. Yesterday, the first college football playoff rankings were released. and I try not to get worked up about these this early on in the season, just because there's so much football still left to be played, 4 to 5 weeks. All right, so we're going to see a lot of changes, I believe, within the next 2 or 3 weeks alone. But I definitely had a problem with the initial rankings. So here we go. The 13-member committee, which has 6 new members, decided to roll with Alabama at number 1, Clemson at number 2, LSU at number 3, Notre Dame at number 4. You go to number 5 and number 6, first two teams out would be Michigan at 7-1 and Georgia at 7-1. And make no mistake about it, once again, the College Football Playoff Committee talks out of both sides. There's no consistency within this committee. Now, this is the one thing that has been the saving grace for the committee. It typically plays itself out. There hasn't been a whole lot of controversy. We had it the 1 year in which Ohio State probably should not have gotten in, but they got in as a 4 and they ended up winning the national championship, and that negated a lot of controversy. Typically for the playoff committee, things have played out to where a first grader could tell you who the top 4 teams in the country are for the most part. I don't know if that's going to be the case this season. And I'll tell you, looking at number 1 through number 4, immediately, it has been botched. It has been botched, and the reasoning behind 1 through 4 is asinine to me. And the hypocrisy continues to run through the College Football Playoff Committee. Rob Mullins, committee chair and Oregon athletic director, had this to say about LSU being the number 3 team in the country despite the fact that they have 1 loss. Quote, LSU's resume. They have 6 wins against teams over 500 and quality wins against Georgia and Mississippi State. Just the close loss to Florida. We're impressed. Overall, their body of work was strong. Bogus. What a load of crap. Since when do we consider wins over against teams over 500 as being the gauge of a quality body of resume? Since when? This is insane to me. Okay, so we take a look at the quality loss. LSU lost to Florida. Under the first rankings, Florida has 2 losses, and they're not even in the top 10. Okay, we take a look at the team that is number 5 in Michigan. They have 1 loss, and that 1 loss is to the number 4 team of the country, which is Notre Dame. So based on quality of loss, Michigan has more merit of being in the top 4 than LSU. So why is LSU getting the benefit of the doubt? 2 reasons. 1, they're an SEC team. Anyone that watches college football knows that there is such thing as an SEC bias. We have been programmed to believe that the SEC is the best conference in college football. And it may be at the top. It may be. But when you get to the middle to the bottom of the SEC, it is no different than any of the other Power 4 conferences in college football. Not even, it's no different. Okay, so that's my first problem. Second problem, LSU being ranked higher than Notre Dame is a monstrosity at this point in time because the Irish are 8-0. Again, it's not going to matter because LSU more than likely will lose to Alabama on Saturday. Notre Dame will then move up to number 3. And then things get really interesting between Michigan and Georgia. This is where it gets tricky for Georgia. LSU beat Georgia. Okay, so if the committee thinks this highly of LSU, a 2-loss LSU team would still count as a quality loss for Georgia. And that's where the SEC may get 2 teams in the college football playoff once again. The flip side of that, the committee thinks so highly of Michigan at this stage in the game. And I'm going back to what Oregon AD and committee chair Rob Mullins said. LSU has 6 wins against teams over 500 and quality wins over Georgia and Mississippi. Where is Michigan's quality win? Are we going to say it's Wisconsin? Because guess what? Wisconsin's not in the top 25. So who's Michigan's quality win? I know who their quality loss is. It's Notre Dame. But Notre Dame's not viewed in the same breath as LSU right now because LSU at 7-1 is more impressive than Notre Dame at 8-0, despite the fact that the Irish beat Michigan, the number 5 team in the country, despite the fact that Notre Dame walloped Stanford, who was ranked higher than them earlier on in the season. They were number 7 at the time. And they defeated Va Tech on the road, who at the time was ranked. Again, it's the hypocrisy of the College Football Playoff Committee, and the only reason we haven't had a disaster at this particular time is because it typically works itself out. That's been the saving grace of the College Football Playoff Committee. So, that brings me to Alabama, number one team in the country. We had to look at the quality of schedule, the body of work for LSU. That's what's so impressive. They have one close loss. Can't hold that against them, right? Because they've beaten so many teams over 500. We can't say that about Alabama, yet they get the number one ranking. Take a look at this body of work for Alabama. They beat Missouri, not above 500. They beat Arkansas, 2-7, yet to win a conference game. They beat Louisiana, not above 500. They beat Texas A&M, who's 5-3. They beat Ole Miss, who's 5-3. They beat Arkansas State, not above 500. They beat Louisville, not above 500. So we use the logic around LSU that they're number three in the country because of how many teams that they have beaten over 500. And the body of work matters, but we look at Alabama, they have beaten two teams over 500. Granted, they have beat them well. I mean, it's been... Tagovailoa hasn't even had to play in the fourth quarter. Tua has been fantastic this season. But they haven't beat anyone of any significance. So how is this logic being used in favor of LSU over Notre Dame, but that logic does not apply to Alabama? I'll bring in Travis Anderson for the remainder of this segment. And Travis, I'm looking at the College Football Playoff Committee once again, talking out of both sides of their mouth, using logic to benefit certain colleges.
Alabama, LSU.
Pretty much anyone from the SEC.
Any time that we're going to have these rankings, you know that the SEC is going to get a lot of love. They're going to get favored. And they are going to be ahead of teams that they shouldn't be. And it happens every year.
I'm not saying that Alabama is not the best team in the country. I'm not saying that.
No, Alabama is the best team in the country.
I think.
I don't know because they haven't played anybody.
Right, so I think they are. You think they are. I understand you thinking they are. But based on where these rankings come from, you can't use the logic as a detriment to Notre Dame that they're not beating teams convincingly, even though they beat the number five team in the country.
Winning.
And they're winning games.
And they beat Michigan handily.
The game wasn't close. Look, here's the problem with it, Travis. And this is a scenario that I could see coming into play. If Notre Dame slips up at the end of the season and they have the same record as Michigan.
Michigan's going to get in.
And they shouldn't.
But they shouldn't.
But they will, the way this is set up.
They're going to favor Michigan,
okay,
absolutely.
So how can the committee look at the fact that Notre Dame... This is what is just so mind-boggling to me. LSU's marquee win is against Georgia. Georgia is number six in the country. Mm-hmm. They have one loss.
Yeah.
Notre Dame's marquee win is against Michigan. They're number five in the country. Notre Dame doesn't have any losses.
Beat them like a drum.
Beat them handedly. I know it was a 7-point win, but Notre Dame beat them handedly in every aspect of the game.
Wasn't as close as that score indicates.
So if you were on the member of this committee, how can you put Notre Dame's marquee win higher than LSU's marquee win and tell me that LSU is a better team and should be ranked higher? It's freaking nonsense to me. I don't understand the logic. And again, it will work itself out. But the playoff committee has been bailed out multiple times over the last 4 years.
They've got lucky.
They have gotten very lucky that everything seems to work itself out. The one team that I have no problem with in the rankings, Clemson is where they should be. I have no problem with Clemson being where they're at right now. But based on quality of loss, LSU should not be in the top three. And Michigan should be in the top four. Notre Dame in the top three. The way it's worked out. Again, I know we got 5 weeks.
Don't get
all upset about it. But Travis, people told me for years the BCS was horrible.
I had no problem with the BCS.
Me neither. No problem with it. And I'm going to tell you why. We have a 13-member committee that is sitting determining these rankings. There is a human element involved
in it. And they don't watch every game.
They don't watch every game. It's not possible for them to watch every game.
They can't. Yeah, there's no way. They just look, you know, they open the paper up on Sunday or Monday, and they're like, oh, look, here's the scores. All right. And then they fill out their ballot.
Look, the system is flawed. Like I said, the College Football Playoff Committee has gotten lucky over the past 4 years. We need some sort of controversy to rectify the current format that we use. It's going to take a massive controversy, and this may be the year, because already I look at the College Football Playoff Committee and I have no problem saying they are fools. And the logic that they continue to spew is flawed. They know it, and anyone that has any logic whatsoever knows it. I want controversy this year. The committee gets bailed out every single season. I hope Notre Dame wins out. I hope Michigan wins out. I hope Georgia wins out. I hope that Alabama doesn't even play for their conference championship, right? Because there's so much emphasis on a conference title. They didn't even play for their conference championship.
They didn't even play, yeah. And they
still get in. So, yeah, so it's the committee talking out of both sides of their mouth. And I want controversy this year.
I'm with you. We need chaos to ensure that they can fix this because, like you said, they've got lucky the past, you know, 3 or 4 years, how long this has been going on. So we need some sort of change.
We got to take a quick commercial break. We'll come back and wrap up this Wednesday edition of the show right after this.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports on KOAL AM 750, the play-by-play home of the USU Eastern Eagles.
Back to close out this Halloween edition of Drive Time Sports. KOAL 107.3 FM, 7:50 AM. I've been fired up all day. I don't know why. I don't know if it's Halloween. I don't know what it is. I've been fired up all day. Let's end with this. Let me complain about one more thing on the show before we close it out. If you were going to dress up as any coach for Halloween, which coach would be the easiest? I say it's Matt Patricia, hands down.
Yeah, you dress like a bum. Put your hat backwards, put a pencil in your ear, and walk around you're very important.
Right. Let me give you the preparation for a Matt Patricia Halloween costume. The night before Halloween, put some sweatpants on, go to sleep. When you wake up in the morning, roll out of bed, throw a hoodie on, put a backwards cap on, pencil behind your ear, boom. Makeshift Matt Patricia Halloween costume.
You know what gets me about the pencil? He uses the white plastic.
He doesn't even use the pencil.
You have to use a marker. So yeah. What the heck's the pencil for?
I don't know. But he did rip a media member today that asked him a question about Golden Tate. Here's the audio.
Is your franchise better?
Do me a favor. Just kind of sit up and just have a little respect for the process. Every day you come in and ask me questions and you just kind of give me this. But I mean, just be a little respectful. I'm asking just to be a little respectful in this whole process, okay? So ask me a question professionally and I'll answer it for you.
Well, that's ironic, isn't it? This is a guy that was that is an NFL football coach that stood on the sidelines for the first 3 weeks of the season with a backwards cap on in a hoodie and sweatpants. And he's actually telling a media member that you're being disrespectful of the process because you're slouched in a press conference. What is he so mad about? Something irritated Matt Patricia today. I don't know if it's because the Lions are in last place and they just traded Golden Tate. But boy, that takes some guts, doesn't it? Boy, I think the lack of professionalism for Matt Patricia, it's obvious. And if he loses that locker room this year, wouldn't surprise me one bit. He's upset. They had to trade Golden Tate. And just say that in your press conference. Just say that. Not a good mood today. We had to trade one of our best offensive weapons because we stink and we're in last place.
You don't have to be rude. Yeah.
And just say it. I'm in a bad mood today.
You know they stink and they're, one game out of first? That's how bad that division is?
The division is pretty compact. But, again, if you're going to go as a coach tonight for Halloween, it's your best bet to go as Matt Patricia because you could pull that one off really fast. I'm not going to complain tomorrow. I swear. I was in a bad mood today. Sometimes that's a good thing, though, to hop on here and just complain to you for an hour. I want to thank Bill Lasky for taking out the time to join us on the show. Tomorrow, we'll dive back into the local sports front. We're going to be joined by Coach Vando and Coach Ray Jones as we get set for the upcoming season. It actually begins on Friday for the USU Eastern Eagles. I'm looking forward to that. He's Travis Anderson. I'm Jordan Buscarini. Have a happy Halloween. We'll catch you tomorrow. Be safe. We are out.